coming to you live from the ice pits of Frackrajune. I'm Johannes Stauffer, and with me as always is a clan of highly intelligent frost baboons. And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 738, Kissing Spiders on the Mouth, and Other Tales from the Boy Scouts.
This is the podcast that never ends. Yes, it goes on and on, my friends. But the song doesn't. I'm Tom.
I'm Johannes.
And we're glad to have you back after that long hiatus we took. We went all over the world. We were in the Caribou.
We were in a caribou.
We were in a caribou. We went to the island of Japan.
Misfit Toys. It's the same place, it turns out.
Oddly. Briefly, we went to Uzbekistan, mm-hmm. which turned out to just be Toronto.
It's pronounced Toronto.
Oh. But at any rate, that's where we were.
Yeah.
So we've had some adventures over the time. We met a shaman.
Yeah.
That's really it. That was the adventure we had. We met this guy who was a shaman.
He was like, I'm a shaman.
And we were like, cool. And then we got to get off the bus. So yeah. That was it.
He probably went and did his shaman thing elsewhere.
Yep.
But we had to get...
Wherever he is, he's probably shaman right now. Oh... You're trapped.
We can't be friends anymore.
You're trapped here with me. This is your purgatory.
Oh. Damn it, Martin Luther. You told me I didn't have to do this.
Actually, I've got a signed paper from Martin Luther. It just says, accept Johannes.
Very nice.
Which he really should have put a last name on there, too, because that's a lot of... Like, that covers, three quarters of Germany?
Especially Germany.
There's a lot of...
Three quarters of Germany, especially Germany.
A lot of Johannes.
The German parts.
The German parts of Germany, as opposed to the parts of Germany that are not German.
Yeah, like Toronto.
Toronto, Germany.
Which is where we were.
Right.
In Uzbekistan.
Yes. You know what my favorite Germany joke is?
Do tell.
My very favorite one. It's if you've got, you know.
I don't.
German, you know, German.
Right.
Are there also germaids? You know, like mermen and mermaids, but germen and germaids.
Mm-hmm. AIDS is it's a virus.
It goes into your body and you die.
So that's, I don't know what actually, are viruses considered germs? Is that a technical term at all?
I don't know if it is or not. I'm not a doctor.
That is so great. Just, that's the best. Everyone is so glad.
I could doctor if I wanted to.
Well, doctor? I barely know her.
Oh my God.
Well, it's been a good episode. We'll see you next week on the Mildly Alarming Podcast.
Strong work from the boys this week. but we're glad you decided to return after our brief breaks there around the Christmas holidays.
And inexplicably stick around after that intro.
It's a strong intro. My mom says we got to be more positive about ourselves. We got to change the inner monologue we have to something that builds us up instead of tears us down.
Didn't she say you need to be more positive about yourselves because no one else is going to do it?
Yeah, I wasn't.
You gotta take the whole sentence.
I wasn't
in gonna
context, bring up that
Tom.
Extra part, Johannes, because it made me sad.
And rightly so.
That's actually not true. My mother is a lovely lady who never says hurtful things to her children.
She's nice to us most of the time.
It's true. She's about like 8 inches shorter than me. Like mm-hmm. maybe not that much, but she's shorter than me. And one time when I was in college, I think I said something indescribably stupid. Like, I was just doing something obnoxious. And she picked me up off of my feet and held me against the wall and was like, you need to stop it. And I'm like, oh. Yep.
Right, you can still kill me.
Yep, I should probably take notice of what's happening right here because I'm not on the ground anymore. And it was surprising, to say the least.
I feel like there was always sort of an unspoken understanding with your mother that, I brought you into this world and I can take you out. She didn't need to say it, but it was there.
Oh, she said that a lot.
I'm sure she did.
That was one of her favorite. Right up there with you're an American, not an American. Those two
amazing
statements defined my childhood.
Yeah, that brings a lot of things into clearer focus here for...
My dad, by contrast, did not talk much, but could defeat a horse in hand-to-hand combat.
Right.
So really, you know, it was pretty obvious that you probably should listen to what the man has to say.
Especially when he chose if you're a horse. Speak up.
Yeah. They quake in terror when he comes nearby.
As well they should.
They should indeed quake. But the partnership or alliance...
Oh, my God.
...that my parents formed made me the man I am today. And that's the topic that we're on today.
Manhood.
Manhood. How to be a good man in our modern society and what masculinity really means in the wake of first, second, and third wave feminism.
Also head coverings that are attached to your shirt.
If you're a boy.
Right.
Right.
So we're actually talking about partnerships and alliances.
In board games.
Specifically.
Particularly, yeah. We're not even remotely qualified to talk about any of that.
Also between Germany and France. I don't know. Has that ever happened? It seems unlikely.
I mean, they're both part of NATO, and they're both part of the EU, so, like, they're kind of homies now.
I don't speak your own language.
You don't know what any of that was, did you?
I tuned out.
Do you know?
Pretty much as soon as you started speaking.
You were thinking about crepes again, weren't you?
I was thinking about That's crepes. Fair. I always wonder, what is a crepe?
I think that crepes is when you pour liquid into a container and you look at the container from the side and it's transparent and there is such as a line with a dip in the middle part of it. And I think that's crepes.
Okay. It seems right.
I would think so.
I was wondering.
Why would I be wrong about that?
It's a very good question.
It is a good question. I ask the best questions.
Yeah. I thought crepes was when you have sort of like a box with colored sticks of wax, which you can then use to make colors on a paper. You could fill in the lines, or you could create artwork on your own. I think that is crepes. That was what I had thought prior to your description.
You know, now that you say that, and I synthesize that information with other things that I thought perhaps were in fact crepes.
Go on.
I think it may actually be when you are in like a grain silo and there is such as barley or perhaps hops under your feet and the manner in which it is moving forms a vortex. And so you attach a carabiner to your shirt.
Right.
And that to a stout length of cord and thus to the roof.
Sure.
And thereby that's crepes.
You make a strong case, but I had thought that crepes was a sort of small crawling animal which makes a burrow under the ground or perhaps in some straw, and it has, you know, whiskers and fur and a long tail, and it might live in a barn, and then sometimes it gets caught in some sort of horrible guillotine-style trap and dies horribly. And I thought that was crepes. But there's no grain involved, or at least very little.
Are you sure that crepes isn't when you mix various substances in a tumbler spinning device? And then you take them out and you spread the resulting slurry and or paste on top of bricks. And then by putting more bricks on top of that, you thus link them in a fairly permanent and stern manner. And that is what you might surmise as crepes.
No, I don't think that's right.
Okay, fair enough. Moving along. So partnerships and alliances, that's our topic for for the evening. After we go through that little bit about, you know, dying in a grain silo, maybe.
You didn't die, provided you had a sturdy shirt.
I don't think you clipped the carabiner directly to your shirt, now that I think about it.
Yeah, it seemed like a bad plan to me.
Yeah, it's not really a great one. You want to wear a harness with that situation. Partnerships and alliances in games. That's what we're thinking about today. We're not... Well, why don't you do it? Why don't you explain the difference between partnerships and alliances and syndicates, oligarchies, teams, and coalitions.
Well, I think that oligarchies. We'll get there, but we're going to start by saying that
we have a broligarchy.
That's true. The bro, it's the broligarchist.
Bah.
I don't think there's anything broligarcher. You disgust me.
Ah, so you disgust me.
Yeah, earlier we were saying how gross you are. So we wanted to make the distinction between teams as set prior to the beginning of gameplay, which cannot be changed, and partnerships or alliances that are optional and or fluid throughout gameplay. I think we've talked about teams. I also think it's more a sort of fact of the game than a mechanic of the game. And so while there may be a few things that cross over into our discussion today, they're not really the things that we're talking about.
It's different if you and I are on a team and that's how the game works and we were that way from the beginning and there's no mechanism to escape it versus you and I have parallel goals and we agree to screw over Gary for a while.
Correct.
That's kind of the distinction we're making at.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, cool. I think a major distinguisher of different whether or not a game is going to have effective teamliness or not is whether or not the mechanics directly support it. One of the most direct ways you can support it is by allowing for allied victory, you know? Like, a team where it's possible for you and me...
So pause for a second, because we just said we're not talking about teams, but I foresee, based on just your last sentence where you said it twice, that we're going to continue saying teams to mean partnerships or alliances.
Oh, yeah.
So, moving forward, now when we say team, we mean partnership.
Oh, yeah,
alliance.
I'm deeply stupid and can't remember different words.
Just to further confuse things.
Why don't we just not do it? Why don't we just say we're going to say partnerships and alliances instead?
Because we're going to say teams. It's one syllable. It's easier to say. Or we could say yeams.
You're only one syllable.
Yours only one syllable. That's true. You are correct. Very good.
Can I have one of those little star stickers?
Later.
My teachers never gave them to me.
That's not surprising.
It's because I...
Because you're dumb.
Because I snuck into their desk and licked all the glue off the backs of the star stickers. when I was supposed to be at recess.
But then put the star stickers inexplicably back.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they weren't any good to me then. The glue was all gone.
Yeah, fair enough. But you... Oh my God. just go. I'll just finish the podcast without you. You can just drive home, drink some more, and then drive home.
The Mildly Alarming Podcast does not support drinking and driving. We are MAD approved.
We're MAD approved. I just did sort of a white boy gang sign.
Yeah, it was unpleasant for both
of
us.
It was...
By mad there, we meant Mothers Against Drunk Driving.
Yeah. And dingy dingoes. They hate those things, too. Dingoes that are just not
washed. When I first saw the acronym MAD and like the vagaries of their organization.
MADD.
Yeah, I thought it stood for Mothers Against...
I'll let Tom recover from just how very proud he is of himself.
It hurts because I have to breathe in my lips.
And you can all wonder what happened behind the sensor noise there forever.
Ah, we have fun here.
Mega super fun time. So we've burned half this segment now. Let's talk about... Not quite teams, but we're going to keep saying teams.
Well, the or example we've got here of a game that allows for allied victory and teams, alliances, partnerships, whatever you want to call it, is Eclipse.
Right.
The game of space battles and space empire building and space. Johannes hates playing it, so I never get it off my shelf.
And lots of little cubes. So many little cubes.
So Eclipse allows you to form an alliance during the game with another player.
Yeah, go ahead.
First, you can form diplomatic relations with them, which doesn't do much except give you some extra little middling bonuses. And
that's also how you make diplomat babies.
True. And make it harder for you to attack each other.
Right.
But then once you have diplomatic relations with somebody, you can then form an alliance in which you pool your victory points and can score a coalition victory.
Right.
There are penalties for breaking off diplomatic relations and or alliances. And in an alliance, it might not work out to your benefit because you average your points to check if you win against the other players. Mm-hmm. So like if Johannes has a lot of points and he's my ally and I just sandbag it and don't have any points, Johannes loses too. Yeah. Unless he escapes from my clutches before the end of the game.
Right.
And takes the penalty for breaking an alliance. So,
I thought we had an alliance. Ski.
Wow, you want to talk inside jokes? How about that one right there?
I figured we'd probably end up going into it. I thought about it, and I thought, it's worth it.
We were playing GoldenEye, but not on the Nintendo 64. We were running around Johannes' house as children with rubber band guns, pretending to be the dudes from GoldenEye.
I forgot we were doing that. I just knew we were shooting each other with rubber band guns, because we also began each rubber band gun fight, in which there were only two of us, by, I believe, saying, the turkey has spawned?
Yes, the turkey had spawned, yeah.
And my mom would go, turkeys don't spawn!
Yeah, we were dumb children.
We also had a hospital where you went when you got shot, which immediately became the Hogspital.
Right. Yeah,
and I believe at some point there were two separate and distinct locations with different functions, one called the hospital and one called the Hogspital, but I don't remember what they
did. See, we were game designers even back then.
Yeah, and just clearly brilliant, brilliant children.
The voices of our generation, but let's move along with the game
here. Well, okay.
So I think that the fact that you're able to get out of your team is essential to Eclipse's team system being, because I really like Eclipse's alliance system.
Uh-huh.
I think that the averaging of victory points makes it a strategic choice to get in an alliance. It's not like it's always good to have an ally.
Right.
It's good to have an ally who's roughly equal strength, equal or better than you.
Yeah.
Because if they're better than you, they'll pull you up. If they're equal, they won't pull you down.
So you're very unlikely to make an alliance with someone who's better off than you because it's only going to hurt them.
Right. Well, but not necessarily, because they might think, I'm now shoring up my right flank.
Yeah, I guess.
And
but shoring up your right flank is only helpful if you think that person can also pull up rather quickly in the victory point category.
Mm-hmm. Or pull you down quickly by attacking you.
Yeah, fair enough.
So you might choose a suboptimal ally just to make sure you're not going to have to smack him around at all.
Yeah, true. So the interesting thing there is it allows for a degree of working in an alliance, in it, trusting one another to not attack and kind of working on other sides, but still always with the question in the back of your mind, is there a move this person can make that will still allow them to win after abandoning the alliance and screwing me over?
Flip side, though, I think it's important that it enshrines the alliance mechanically. Like,
agreed.
You get a little token that says we are in an official alliance and there's a penalty for breaking it.
And if you break it, you flip the token and it has the penalty on the back of it.
If you go over to Game of Thrones, for example, another big war game, but this time in a fantasy world, instead of space.
Mm-hmm.
Alliances happen all the time there, and agreements and that sort of thing, but there's never anything mechanically to keep track of it.
Yeah.
And there's no mechanical penalty for breaking it other than what the other guy is able to impose upon you later on.
Right.
And so that makes it more realistic but less fun as a game, I feel like.
Yeah, I think I think the alliances work better mechanically in Eclipse than in most places I've seen.
Risk because it or does, that kind of thing, yeah.
Yeah, because if you make an alliance in Risk or in a game where it's not explicitly allowed or encouraged by the game rules, but it's not disallowed either, all you have is the word of this other person. And as anyone who has played enough board gamery knows, the word of even your best friend, probably, actually, the word of your best friend is worth even less than the word of a stranger when it comes to a game. If you would trust this person implicitly in real life, they're probably going to stab you in the back because they know exactly how to lie to you in a board game. And Tom being like, oh yeah, totally, go, you know,
well,
mass all your troops on that side. It'll be fine.
To be fair, you would never follow that advice from me because you can tell when I'm lying.
Yeah. Most of the time, I guess. But good. Like you and I did a lot of this at Protospiel this year when we would, or last year now, we would be playing games that did not explicitly allow for alliances in any way, and we would hear the game description, and Tom would turn to me, or occasionally I would turn to Tom first and go, would you like to form a shadowy oligarchy? And we would sort of kind of team up on everyone else at the table for as long as the game allowed.
Because that's a fairly essential balancing point at any game where cooperation is possible.
Yeah.
Is, am I always going to be strictly better off by cooperating with another player than by not cooperating?
Yeah.
And is there ever a situation where breaking that cooperation matters?
Right.
And in some games there was, some games there wasn't, but you want to keep that in mind if you're designing a game where players can conceivably cooperate with each other. It's the prisoner's dilemma is really what it is.
Explain what the prisoner's dilemma is.
So the prisoner's dilemma is you've got, is a philosophical or game theory problem where you have two prisoners in adjacent cells, and they're not allowed to ever, they, or maybe not adjacent, but they're in cells, and they're not allowed to communicate with each other. And the warden is going to bring them each into his office one at a time and say, okay, you guys, and he tells them ahead of time the rules. Okay, here's how it's going to go down. If you both, let me make sure I get this right. If you both stay silent, we let you go free. You both get out of here because we don't have the proof to do this. If one of you rats on the other, but the other guy stays silent, the guy who ratted is going to get 2 years. The guy who's silent is going to the death penalty chair. He's done.
That's the worst penalty chair.
If you both rat on each other, you're both going to the death penalty chair.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I might have had it wrong, but the essence of it is that cooperation, you want to balance whether or not it's beneficial, always beneficial to cooperate versus occasionally beneficial to betray the other guy.
Yeah.
Any sort of alliance game is going to be pushing you in that direction. I feel like I completely butchered that. The prisoner's dilemma. We might need to link to the wiki article.
We should do that. We'll also link there because there's a video online of one of these. I forget what it's called now. I think it's a British game show where you're sort of competing, sort of working together. It's not really clear to me because the video picks up at the end. But the very last thing is exactly what you just described. Like there's $1 million and you have to agree to either steal or forfeit, we'll call it. And if you both steal, no one gets anything. If you both forfeit, you both get half. But if you steal and the other one forfeits, you get everything. And this guy basically says, no matter what you do, I will steal. But I will give you half of it if you forfeit. And like talks the other guy into forfeiting. Basically, he's like, no, I promise. I'm going to steal. No matter what you do, I'm going to steal. I'm going to steal. So don't steal because you'll ruin it for both of us. I'm telling you right now, I'm going to steal. If you forfeit, I'll give you half. And so he is convinced the other guy to forfeit. And then they both forfeit. So they get, you know, double or whatever it is. But he's clearly like working that game theory angle. So anyway, you can watch the video or read the Wikipedia article or both, whatever. We'll put them in the show notes.
No shoots.
And those are things that happen. So what I find kind of stressful, I guess, I like the mechanical addition of the penalty for breaking an alliance in Eclipse, because I don't really enjoy the will he, won't he, like, interpersonal communication, trying to read someone's face and also trying to not only figure out what my strategy is going forward, but how their strategy may or may not affect it or be affected by it going forward. And so if it's a totally just, you know, handshake alliance with no penalty for breaking it, that's just stressful for me.
That puts you into a spot where it's no longer an interesting game problem. It's a pain in the butt.
And so at Protospiel, it was kind of entertaining because, first of all, I was there to learn the games and I knew we were going to move on to the next thing. It wasn't a game day where the same group of eight of us were going to play a bunch of games for the rest of the day. It was like, we're all going to learn this guy's game and give him some pointers. And really, that's the point at the end of it. And if I get totally destroyed in this game, it doesn't matter. That's also useful feedback to give. And the two of us were basically, it's like us against them. And even if you did screw me at the end and win or whatever, I didn't care so much.
Right.
Because the game was kind of secondary to figuring out the game, if that makes any sense.
No.
But if we're at a game night and we're playing a game, I don't have as nearly as much interest, and I can't trust as much that you're not going to backstab me because it's not us against them, because we're all friends. And so it's just kind of every man for himself, even when there are alliances. So I do like the mechanical reinforcement of alliances in Eclipse for me. But if you're really looking for the kind of operate outside the rules, mischief and intrigue of alliances that can be broken and betrayed, especially for a game like Game of Thrones, it's kind of better if it's not.
Sure, sure. If that's part of, if that part of the game appeals to you, definitely.
Yeah,
I agree that I like the mechanically impactful alliances better myself. Even if the mechanic isn't explicitly like with Eclipse, where it gives you, there's just a points penalty for it. But like if it's sudden, if there's technology sharing, or or you get a better rate of trade for resources between the two powers if they have a formal alliance or something like that, where you get some concrete measurable thing that you can know, okay, if he decides to betray me, he might do it at any moment and it might be to his benefit, but I know what he's losing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to, there's a part of it where I don't have to get inside his head and try to weigh the game as he would weigh it, not as I would weigh, if that makes sense.
Yeah. There's something, sorry if I'm stepping on your point because I zoned out thinking about something else, but there's something that Eclipse does, so this is another downside of an overly mechanical alliance system, where you cannot pass through another person's occupied hex without incurring combat. Incurring is probably not the word I wanted, but whatever.
Sure.
Unless you at least have diplomatic relations.
You need an alliance.
Really? Even with diplomatic?
Even with diplomacy,
like,
you
can't. That's silliness. Like, you need to have neutral parties. That just needs to be possible. And even, like, even if it were just, you need, like, diplomatic relations. If you have diplomatic relations, but you can't pass through their space, that's not diplomatic relations. That's not what that is.
Yes and no. I think, well, I'm getting into, never mind. The point I was going to make was going to be too themey and not mechanic-y enough.
Mm-hmm.
The point I was going to make is, well, but we're talking, all of the ships you have on the board in Eclipse are warships. I mean,
sure.
You don't roll, you don't roll your navy into somebody else's territorial waters just because you have diplomatic relations with them.
Yes, but if you have diplomatic relations with them, you could say, hey, I'm going to war with person over there.
Can we cross through
your territory?
Okay.
And you could say no, but you could also say yes. And it wouldn't be, yes, but you also have to ally with me in this way that it now involves, like, sending aid money and troops to us. Mm-hmm. It could just be like, yeah, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
So, another game that does an interesting thing with alliances is Coup.
I believe it's pronounced co-op.
Kaup.
I think it's pronounced...
If you say Sepulchre, I'm going to rip your eyes out of your head.
Well, but then I wouldn't be able to see.
Yeah. Yeah, I should have thought this through more. I should, like, remove your tongue or your vocal cords, you know. I was just thinking about causing you pain initially.
Fair enough.
Just hurting you in some way.
So, Coup.
Yeah. Coup is a game.
So, Coup, and specifically Coup's expansion, the expansion to Coup.
Which has a name, probably.
Probably.
Coup, the expansion.
Listen, I feel like
Coup is... Coup harder.
I feel like Coup is a famous enough game that we don't need to identify its expansion by name.
Yeah, right. That's a good excuse for not knowing what it's called.
Right? Coup's expansion introduces what I think is a really great enhancement to the game, whereby each player has a loyalty. They're either a reformist or a loyalist. And over the course of the game, those can shift, and you can flip your card and whatnot, and you switch teams.
Yep.
But... the key thing is, unless everybody is on the same team, you can't target players not on your team. So if me, Johannes, and Johannes are reformists and Gary is a loyalist, Johannes and I can only target Gary.
Yeah.
We can't pick each other. But if we're all loyalists, for example, it's a free-for-all. And so what Coup does that's really cool as well is you can change your own loyalty for a certain amount of money, but you can also change other people's loyalty.
For a slightly higher amount of money.
Right. So you can manipulate who is a legal target for certain players' actions, thus protecting yourself, maybe?
Yeah.
If you're careful about it and get a little bit lucky?
What you can also do with changing your loyalty or someone else's loyalty is kind of wield another player as a blunt weapon. That's the terminology we always use.
Right.
Where if... there's a player who has amassed so many credits that they are going to have to coup, which is basically like an unblockable damage point. You can take 2 damage and then you're out of the game. if someone has amassed so much that they have to, because once you, is it 10?
10.
10 credits you have to coup. You can change your own. You can change their loyalty. You can change someone else's loyalty just to make sure that either they can't target you or they have to target someone else. Mm-hmm. And it makes it fun both to do that, to, you know, change it up at the last second. So, you know, Gary thinks he's safe and then you change either his loyalty or the loyalty of the person who's about to coup or whatever. But it also means if you don't want to, like, I often find myself in this situation playing coup where I'm like, I don't really feel like drawing the ire of any one of my friends, either because they might actually get upset in the real world mm-hmm. for being picked on, or because they and I are the only two players who still have two cards left in the game, you know, are the ones likely to be targeted anyway. I don't want to draw their attention, so I'm just going to let someone else decide who I deal damage to on my next turn. I'm just going to, it's not my problem anymore. I'm going to let the other players mm-hmm. throw their credits around and decide who I invariably have to coup on my next turn, which is kind of nice. It's also fun to watch because you get to see the group dynamic of like who's gunning for who else.
Yeah, it's a really great mechanic. I think the designers of that expansion really made a strong. It's one of those. It's an expansion element that I feel almost is core now. Like I wouldn't really want to play coup without it.
Without it, yeah.
Yeah, like the other parts of the expansion, like it introduces another card to the deck. We don't want to get too much in the weeds of coup. Are expansion items like you can play with them or you can also play without them. It works both ways.
Yeah.
The loyalty cards, though. Those add a layer to the game that really needs.
It's pretty great.
Yeah, I like coup. It's a good game.
It is a good game. It has staying power. So there are a few games out there that kind of ride the line between teams and alliances, as mm-hmm. we have defined those differences. And one that stood out to me was Two Rooms and a Boom.
I'm sorry, how many rooms?
It's just the two rooms.
How many booms, though?
But there's just one boom.
This changes everything.
Well, no, it's how it's always been. It changes nothing. Oh. It remains the same as it was intended.
Oh.
Just the two rooms and the one
two
boom.
I'm sorry. Let me make sure I have this right. It's one room and two booms.
No. No. So you have one room, right?
Okay.
But then you also have another room.
So three rooms.
No, just the two.
Two.
Yeah, one and one is...
Three.
No, two.
Two.
It's just two.
Two rooms.
Yeah.
Okay, two rooms. Two rooms, two... Okay, two rooms. I got that part.
Right. And then there's also a boom.
There's a boom.
Just a boom.
So, two booms?
No, one.
One boom.
Just one.
Zero booms.
One.
One boom.
Well, afterward, there's probably zero because you've used it up.
Well, sure.
But so, let's not confuse things. So, just the two rooms.
Two rooms.
And one boom.
One boom.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay.
Two rooms and a boom.
Three rooms, two booms.
Also works. Why not?
Two rooms and a boom. Go.
You have two teams, which are predetermined.
They are blue and red.
Those are, in fact, the colors that they are. And you have two rooms, but there's a smattering of each team in each room. And nobody knows who's on what team. You only know what team you're on. And then through various interactions, you have to try to figure out who's on your team. There's also a few roles.
Mm-hmm.
In the base game, there's just a bomber on one team and the president on the other, right?
Yep.
And then the goal of the team with the president, which I believe is blue.
I believe so,
blue,
yeah.
Blue team's goal is after the last round for the president not to be in the room with the bomber. And the red team's goal is on the last round for the president from the blue team to be in the room with the bomber from the red team mm-hmm. and thus get exploded. That's pretty simple.
That's the eponymous boom.
Exactly. The eponymous boom sounds like an indie band mm-hmm. or a... Indie this would have been much funnier if I could remember his name. The guy who made Fantastic Mr. Fox and...
Oh, well, Wes Anderson.
It sounds like a Wes Anderson film, The Eponymous Boom.
Yeah, I don't know if I would see that.
I wouldn't. So anyway, there are a bunch of extra roles that you can add in depending on what kind of game you want to play and the number of people you have playing that suddenly make it so that now teams can shift or there can be a sort of a third party because some of the add-in cards have a win condition that has nothing to do with the team's win conditions.
Mm-hmm.
I think Romeo and Juliet want to be in the same room as the bomb, and they don't care what happens to the president. They just something want like to that, blow up together or something like that. And so it's a lot of the social interaction and the like polarization of teams and alliances.
There are some roles that let you swap cards so that a person who starts out on the red team might not end on the red team.
Yeah. There are also cards that force you to swap cards. Mm-hmm. So it kind of rides the line between team and alliance in that there's some ability to change, but you can't just be like, I'm leaving this team. I'm not red anymore. I'm blue because I like the president. He seems like a real cutie. There may be a card that allows you to do that for that reason. There are a lot of extra cards. We have not tried anywhere close to all of them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's the one that kind of stood out as in between, and I think does it well. I think we reviewed it on the podcast already, so you can go back and find our Two Rooms in a Boom episode, which we will also make an attempt to. Tom is doing sort of a weird, unpleasant hip-hop dance. I'm sorry that are now picturing that in your mind.
They can't even see it. You didn't have to say anything.
I know, but I kind of did. It was a defense mechanism.
If you hadn't said anything, you would be the only one who knows about it.
Exactly. So anyway, that's what we think about partnerships and alliances. Do you have anything to add?
I like them. I think partnerships and alliances are an interesting game mechanic. I'm always drawn to games that have them.
Yeah.
Just because it's fun to play with a buddy. It's fun to have another person on your side doing stuff. And it's fun. Like one of the games, is that a game we've reviewed on the podcast? It's not a game we would review on the podcast because it's just a basic. Euchre. Euchre is the game I'm talking about. Euchre is the game I'm building.
I've never actually played Euchre, but carry on. Yeah. Somehow I grew up in Michigan and I've never played Euchre.
Must be a communist. So Euchre is a trick-taking card game common to the upper Midwest. I think Michigan and Wisconsin are really the two places it's played a lot.
As I understand it.
And it's in partners. So 2-on-2.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying with your partner to take 3 out of 5 tricks on a given go around the circle. And it has a lot of hidden information that you might not know about, but also a lot of channels to communicate that information back and forth between you and your partner. And it's a lot of fun. And I think that's where my interest in partnership games comes from, is playing Euchre at lunch in high school.
I didn't realize it was a trick-taking game either. I should try it sometime. I'm generally just not interested in card games that use a standard deck of cards.
It's fun. Like, if you've got a standard deck of cards and you're like, we need to play a card game now because I'm going to fight you if we don't do something.
Doesn't it require 2 decks of cards?
No, Euchre only needs 1. Euchre needs less than 1, actually, because it doesn't use all the cards.
Okay.
I think you're thinking of Pinochle.
This is a family podcast, Tom.
Pinochle.
Stop saying it.
No, Pinochle is just a card game.
Stop saying that word.
Pinochle.
Stop it.
Pinochle.
So many farm animal noises.
Pinochle.
You're disgusting.
Pinochle.
Gross.
Pinochle. Poop knuckle.
That's not a word, so I don't have to censor it. Well, if you would like to share with us your feelings on partnerships and alliances, or if there are great
parsnip games,
delicious parsnip games, any sort of root vegetable that you would like to recommend, if you're into, persimmons, that's another thing, you should let us know. Also games, if there are games that just Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
Email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
Website at www.mildlyalarming.com. Or Facebook at facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow. Nicely done. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsor.
Hi everyone, Larry Mayonnaise here to invite you all to the grand opening of my new store. And to show you just how excited we all are, I'm making my way downtown, walking fast, faces past, and I'm handing out free coupons to passersby. Excuse me, sir, I'm Larry Mayonnaise. Would you like a coupon for my new store?
Absolutely not.
But why?
You're called Larry Mayonnaise. There's no way that ends well.
Huh?
Look, it's like this. Either your name is Larry Mayonnaise, in which case, that's weird. You're a weirdo. Or you're using that name because it has something to do with your store, in which case, what could you possibly sell that I would want? Is your store just all mayonnaise? I don't need that many mayonnaise options in my life. Or is mayonnaise a euphemism? Foul. Are you a front for some sort of organized condiment crime? Undoubtedly.
But you could get
no,
like
never gonna go anywhere near anything called Larry Mayonnaise. Good day.
So come on down to Larry Mayonnaise and get yourself some mayonnaises.
Welcome back to Broccoli Talk with Lionel Pelpudi. I'm Lionel Pelpudi.
And I'm Clem.
And we're just going to talk about just broccoli.
I'm not supposed to be here.
You're not.
I'm not. It's just his show, but it's walked in and I sat down and I have a gun, so I get to be part of it.
How do you feel about broccoli, Clem?
I like it when it's soaked in cheese, Lionel Pelpudi.
Can you really soak broccoli in cheese, Clem?
You can if you leave it in the cheese long enough.
Would you like to add anything else?
No, we're good. I'm out.
Okay, cool.
Cheers.
This is not a good podcast.
Fucking brilliant. Don't sell us short. Remember, we're Americans, not Ameri's can't.
Fair enough.
Americans. Americats?
I'm not a cat.
I'm not either.
Well, are we keeping this? Is this going to stay in the show?
Yeah, I think we should keep this in the show.
Okay,
it's
all
great
right.
Stuff.
Well,
it's great material.
Yeah, we'll keep it, but it really takes away from our listeners' ability to believe the next statement, which is that we're sorry that the last segment went so long.
I don't think we're sorry about that at all.
Okay, fair enough. But we didn't realize that it went so long.
Yeah, it was long.
It was longer than it was short.
The amount of time it took was greater than anticipated.
Indeed.
Indeed.
Indubitably.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening.
So we're just going to talk about broccoli for another 14 minutes, and
yeah,
then we'll be done.
We like broccoli. I like it when you dip it in cheese.
I like, you know, just broccoli. It's fine.
It's good. Like, it really wants to pick up a flavor from something else. It's like chicken that way.
Yeah, I feel like it gets a bad rap, you know?
Mm, sure, sure.
And I think I like it better uncooked than cooked, but I don't dislike it cooked either. It's fine.
I like it cooked, but not super cooked. Like, once it gets soggy and, like, really blah, 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 the florets, they're called.
That is what they're called.
Aren't any good anymore.
They're also sometimes called little trees, and I would say probably more often, but less accurately. Yeah.
You don't want to get it to the point where, like, the florets are soggy and, like, droopy on you. They still got to have some a sense of structure to them. But I do like it cooked enough that it's not crunchy, I guess is how I would put it.
Sure.
And cooked enough how the flavors of the rest of the dish soak into it a little bit.
I think it's nice in a thing, you know, with another flavor. Yeah. You're saying in a good cheddar broccoli soup.
Ooh, I love a cheddar broccoli soup.
That's good.
It's good stuff. Or, like, I like to do it. Like, just a baking pan with some chicken breasts and some broccoli and, like, a sauce drizzled over the whole thing. Enough that when you bake it in there, the chicken will get all the juices in it so it won't dry out. Like, I always find it does on the grill. And the broccoli will absorb a bunch, and it's just great.
Or if you take a single sprig of broccoli and an entire brick of cheddar and you put them in a bowl and you just microwave it for a couple minutes, and then you eat it with a spoon. I couldn't do it. I tried.
Yes, that is also an option.
Sorry, maybe if you put it in a mug and then you just drink it through a straw or not.
Or just
you could eat it with your hands.
Yeah, whatever
you
want to do.
You might get burned. Get some gloves.
Broccoli is also one of your better dipping vegetables. Like, I like it better than celery or carrot sticks, frankly. Because, again, the texture of those florets does a great job of picking up ranch or whatever ranch
blue
dressing
cheese,
you want to use.
Which is just ranch with blue cheese in it.
Yep. Yeah, whatever ranch dressing you want to dip your broccoli in is probably fine.
Yeah, well, another nice, you know, this ties back into the board game aspect of our podcast here. If you were to,
oh, it does.
If you could take broccoli if you needed to make little trees, and you could just spray some sort of fixative on there, and maybe hopefully it won't rot within that clear hard shell that you've made, and you can use it for trees if you need to build a forest for your D&D campaign or something.
Are you on drugs right now?
Yes.
Okay. I don't think I have anything else to say about broccoli.
Apparently Albert Broccoli, like that, you know, the family,
mm-hmm.
is actually named for broccoli, or maybe broccoli is named for them. It's something unexpected and surprising. And
you mean the family that was responsible for like 9 out of 10 James Bond films?
You know, I don't care enough to remember what I learned on some podcast that may or may not have been true and didn't bother to
I think the,
back up
I think
their
the lead guy's name was Albert K. Cubby Broccoli.
Really?
They called him Cubby.
That I would. People must not have liked him.
He made a lot of James Bond movies.
I guess.
I'd let people call me Cubby if I got to make a lot of James Bond movies. He was probably pretty rich as a result of that.
Yes.
And I mean, I'm rich to start with because it's my name.
You're stupid and we're done here. So if you would like to contact us on Twitter, you can do that at Mildly Alarming.
You can do it by email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
You do it. I like that you just went with it. You can do it on the website at www.mildlyalarming.com or on facebook.com/mildlyalarmingshow. You can also please rate and review us on iTunes or Stitcher or I was going to say Twitter again, but that's not even a thing. iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, TuneIn Radio. That's probably all of them.
Or you can just juggle broccoli until such time as you are dead, and then we won't know, but it won't matter, because we live in a world of darkness and fear.
The Mildly Alarming Podcast is brought to you by the bad... me, Fat Dave. For my YouTube channel, the Bad Product Reviews YouTube channel with Fat Dave. Here's a sample of what we do. Hey YouTubers, today I'm reviewing literally a can of Barf brand energy drink. As you can see here, the can is kind of a greenish yellow color. It's with some yellow green highlights, as you can see here. And there's not a lot of text on it. The words, other than the brand name, is this can is literally filled with barf. And there's just some nutrition facts on the back. If you can see, the camera's a little out of focus. You can see it. It's just 10 calories per serving. So I'm going to crack it open now, and here goes. Cool. It smells. Time to take a swig.
Bad Product Reviews YouTube channel. He paid us to do that.